This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary extract and natural honey flavor. Future Farm's Wild Oil of Oregano supports a variety of healthy benefits, including antimicrobial effects, as well as supporting the immune system. Plus, Future Farm is the first ever to formulate Wild Oil of Oregano with rosemary. Rosemary aids circulation, helps alleviate muscle pain, improves memory, and also gives your immune system a boost. The natural honey flavor enhances the taste while still giving you all of the benefits. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Wild oil of oregano is all natural, science-based, and works without adverse side effects. MyFutureFarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today we're going to cover a very important subject, which has to do with children's health. You know, when it comes to kids these days, well, it's certainly pediatrics is making progress against some of the diseases which caused tremendous childhood and infant mortality. We're thankful for miracle cures which prevent the diseases of the past from claiming lives. But we're seeing all kinds of problems with our kids, bizarre, complex medical conditions, autism, allergic conditions, autoimmune conditions. So many kids are taking heavy-duty drugs almost from the time of infancy. And so what's going on with that? Well, today's guest is the co-author of a book entitled What's Making Our Children Sick? And the subtitle is How Industrial Food is Causing an Epidemic of Chronic Illness and What Parents and Doctors Can Do About It. She's Dr. Michelle Perro. She's an MD. And she, together with Vincent Adams, PhD?
Correct, Dr.
Okay.
Hoffman.
Got the pronunciation correct. Have written a great book. Dr. Perro is a veteran pediatrician. She's got over 35 years of experience. Started out in conventional pediatrics, but she transformed her clinical practice to include health advocacy, and she is now managing a place called Down to Earth Pediatrics, a holistic urgent care clinic for children. What a great idea. She's been an integrative physician at the Institute for Health and Healing. That's part of something out there in the Bay Area, Sutter Pacific Medical Center. And so she's eminently qualified to talk to us about kids' health. Welcome to Intelligent Medicine. It's a pleasure having you on board.
I'm thrilled to be here, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you so much.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about your journey. How did you get into this? Because presumably you, like I, were trained in conventional medicine, and we made our way into a more integrative model of practice.
Indeed, I'm a New Yorker, now transplanted Californian, and I came from a very traditional training, Mount Sinai, NYU. Mm-hmm. My background's mostly in acute care, pediatric emergency medicine, and I transitioned from there to Oakland Children's Hospital, now UCSF Benioff Children's Hospital. And so I was a passionate about acute care pediatric medicine. But what happens to so many of us, and perhaps you can relate to this, is we have issues with our own family members. My own son had health challenges. And from his health challenges, I learned about an integrative tool that's called homeopathy, which makes every Western doc roll their eyes. And my eyes rolled too initially, that these little sugar pills were going to help my son. And a pediatrician homeopath out here in California helped me with my son, and it was miraculous. That began my journey into saying, well, wait a second. I need to learn about more integrative tools because this was nothing short of miraculous. So I began to transition into integrative medicine. That paralleled, at the same time, I was running my own practice, Down to Earth Pediatrics, that you mentioned, which is unfortunately now closed since I've gotten into the book and lecturing and other things just for your listeners. And what happened, I was approached by a parent of a patient, and she said, Dr. Perro, we need your help. We need a pediatrician on our board, and you'll do. And to stop the spray of pesticides in Northern California. They wanted to spray the entire coast in 2006 against this light brown apple moth. And I had no intention of doing that. I am not an activist. I was a busy mom, two small kids, PTA, running my practice. You got the picture, Dr. Hoffman?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, I'm sure you know, we're all familiar with this. But I took it on.
We sometimes get dragged into these commitments by kicking and screaming.
I was kicking and screaming. I was a reluctant activist. I had no. This was never my thing. So I enter the world of activism with these incredibly smart, motivated, passionate women. And one of them, from my county here in Marin County, said, "Michelle, what do you think about GMOs?" And I didn't think about GMOs. And I said, "Nothing. Why should I be thinking about GMOs?" And she said, "You need to read Jeffrey Smith's book."
Mm-hmm.
And it's Seeds of Deception. And I read his book, because when moms speak, I listen. I'm trained to do that, Dr. Hoffman. And then I realized a light bulb was starting to pop off in my brain on page 16 of his book when I read about the work of someone named Dr. Arpad Pusztai. And he was the first researcher in Europe, and he was asked to look at genetically modified food before it was introduced into Europe. And that was my entry point into this GM food associated pesticide movement, which I've now been on for almost 12 years.
Okay, and we'll get into it specifically, your concerns with what you term industrialized food. But you have a co-author on the book, and I read her bio, and she sounds intriguing because her background's in anthropology, which is actually what I was trained in originally before I decided to take a U-turn into medicine. She's a medical anthropologist, Dr. Vincent Adams. What perspective does she bring to the discussion in your book?
This has been a unique and fabulous marriage between medical anthropology and clinical medicine. And the meeting was serendipitous. She moved into my neighborhood, and we are next-door neighbors. And on a hike with the pooch, out we are walking. What do you do? What do you do?
Yeah.
I do this. I do that. She told me about her amazing background. She's smart. She's sassy. She's curious. She does ethnography. She has 6 books, under her belt. And I said, "Wow, you are an amazing author. I've been trying to publish and write this book of mine for the past 3 years. But my challenge was, after sitting in front of a computer all day, every day at the clinic, I could not park my tushy in a chair, Dr. Hoffman. So Dr. Adams, Vincent, said to me, "Michelle, I'll help you write that book." And I said, "Wait a minute. The clinical forefront with the bigger vision of a medical anthropologist, this is perfect." It was serendipitous. It was this beautiful relationship. And she allowed my somewhat myopic view of being on the clinic to a broader social political landscape. So I think it worked really well.
Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about anthropology, and it probably, sometimes I think, what did my training in anthropology do in terms of my medical knowledge? I mean, it's, I didn't learn medicine in college, but I think it opened my mind to a perspective that many cultures other than our own, which is highly technically based and science based, have healing systems that are valid. They may seem primitive, perhaps they don't have, first line antibiotics and vaccines and, a variety of high tech. They don't have pediatric ICUs, but they have healing systems that cope well with some of the diseases that seem to really stymie us in our advanced society.
Very sage, Dr. Hoffman. I couldn't concur more. And Dr. Adams' specialty is Tibetan health. So she was able to bring this very unique view, where food is a key component of Tibetan medicine, by the way. So she was able to bring the years, decades of research from her unique viewpoint into her writing as we, collaborated on this project.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk about this notion of the increased prevalence of certain childhood diseases. What are we talking about here? And you muster some very impressive statistics in your book.
The stats are, to say nothing short of shocking. If every pediatrician is not jumping up and screaming, I don't know what's going on. So, we're scientists. We look at data. I mean, I'm an integrative physician, but I love data, and we dug deep. And so if you look at the big landscape, first of all, 1 out of 2 children has a chronic disease now. And people have become so accustomed now to their child being sick that they don't even consider them disorders like ADHD.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You wrote a book about it. Asthma. 1 in 8 children now has asthma and other atopic diseases. How about autoimmunity? I mean, we profound amount of not just morbidity, but mortality from autoimmune diseases. And obesity, 1 in 5 kids. And food allergies, before I get into the most shocking piece of information, what I keep honing in on are food allergies, because they're astronomical. So probably 1 in 13 kids has a food allergy, and that's just IgE. But if we look at the what we call intolerances, mm-hmm. and I don't believe them to be intolerances, right. I think they're true food allergies, IgG, IgA. Every kid, I'd say 95% of the children I was seeing in my integrative clinic mm-hmm. had food allergies, chronic inflammation. And when I tested family members who were unaffected, they did not. So my husband, who's also a physician, would say, wait a minute, all your patients have IgG or IgA antibody? Impossible. I said, well, I've tested their parents, and their parents don't. So these are not lab errors. So where I was going with that point. Redirect me, Dr. Hoffman.
We also see, and this is something that really surprises me, and, you know, you've been around for a long time in the field of medicine, and what we're seeing is increasing prevalence of the use of powerful acid-blocking medications in young children, infants, you know, taking Prevacid and, you know, powerful proton pump inhibitors because they have what used to be thought, you know, an adult disease, GERD, reflux, but the kids have it and they're getting powerful drugs. What's up with that?
There is a shocking increase in gastroesophageal reflux disease, GERD, and I, with the huge population of infants and toddlers as well. The infants, it's more obvious because they spit up massive amounts of, you know, milk. In toddlers and older kids, parents often don't know it because kids feel that it's normal, that their food's coming back up. It is linked to gluten, if you can believe that. Part of it is linked to gluten and GERD. It's a strange relationship, I know. And I know you've had Dr. Perlmutter on the show, and I'm mm-hmm. sure he may have addressed this as well. And oftentimes, when you take children off gluten, their GERD gets better. But part of it is indeed related to the gut, and we can go into the intestinal permeability, the leaky gut. Part of it's related to food, and part of it is related to the fact that children need manipulative medicine as well. Hmm. I send a lot of my patients for hands-on therapy for cranial sacral osteopathy, and sometimes the vagus nerve gets locked down, and osteopaths, particularly ones who work with children, can release those quickly, and the GERD goes away.
So that's a gateway into the body that's not exploited by mainstream medicine. It's very interesting.
Not at all. Yeah. Yes.
So in the beginning of the book, you lay out the proposition that we are in the midst of a, quote, perfect storm, a cataclysm of three things that are coming together, converging, to create a health crisis for our kids. Can you speak to that issue?
So, yes, this perfect storm that we're experiencing is that the majority of our children's diets now are genetically modified, so most food, especially processed food, has genetic modification products, and if you eat genetically modified food, you will get a significant amount of pesticides. The amount of pesticides sprayed on these crops has gone up significantly because of weed resistance. So kids are getting more genetically modified food and more pesticides than ever before in our history. They're not only getting it in their food, there's glyphosate with the main ingredient in Roundup, and I know all your viewers know this, but it's in everywhere. It's in the air, it's in the water, it's in the food, mm-hmm. it's in the breast milk, it's everywhere. So it's ubiquitous in the environment, and children are getting it in. So there's that element of the food, this cataclysm of this alteration in our food, coupled with other toxicants in our environment in terms of EMFs, in terms of plastics, in terms of heavy metals that are affecting our children. And we go deep into the book the lack of regulatory control and support for our food supply, that the FDA, USDA, EPA have fallen asleep at the wheel, and there's the fox is guarding the hen house, and there's nobody regulating our food supply. And so this has become this massive problem, and we kind of tease that out in the book and start going into it using our, you know, my patients' clinical stories mm-hmm. to highlight it.
And there's sort of a clash of paradigms, too, because the paradigm of conventional medicine is to look at specific symptoms or categorize things as diseases, and it's find a bug, use a drug, or use a you know, a laser-like therapy to target an illness. But the other paradigm, the paradigm that you and I embrace, is a more sort of a holistic paradigm.
You know, with every patient that I see, I go to the root cause. I'm always looking for the root cause. I usually, in children, begin with the gut, since so many of them have gut disturbances. And the reason why I focus on that gut for, you know, obviously the intestinal permeability and the dysbiosis, the abnormal microbiome these kids all seem to have, because I test that too. But the gut, as we know, is 70% responsible for their immune system. So their immune systems are wacky. A third of the kids are born via C-section, so they don't acquire the normal microbiome. And this is setting up a parallel storm of chronic infection. Because I know you've spoken about it. Some of your speakers in the past have discussed this as chronic explosion of infection, like Lyme, like chronic mono infection, you know, chronic fatigue syndrome, where kids' immune systems are not robust. Mm-hmm. And they're faulty, and it, largely in part because of, you know, the gut dysfunction.
And in talking about food, you make a distinction between industrialized food and, quote, real food. But you take a little bit of a shot at Michael Pollan in the book because, you know, you say, well, he wrote, I guess, what's called the Omnivore's Dilemma, mm-hmm. or something like that, which, you know, he says, we'll eat, you know, natural foods, unadulterated foods, don't eat packaged or processed foods. But you actually want to take it one step further. You feel that some, quote, healthy foods may not be healthy after all. I mean, in his perfect world, people would be having plenty of whole wheat, lots of pasteurized milk, and, you know, if you could afford it, organic, but, you know, in a pinch, just get regular GMO or, you know, treated produce, fruits and vegetables. That's not enough.
I think 20 years ago, that was enough. Yes, I think 20 years ago, that would have been a valid point. Our health and our children's health has so deteriorated since that time, since, you know, of 20 years duration, since, you know, since the introduction of GMOs and their associated pesticides in 1996, that kids now can no longer tolerate those diets. Years ago, yes, but the foods don't look like real foods anymore. If you buy a processed food, well, it's got genetically modified soy lecithin, just about everything. Mm-hmm. It's got high fructose corn syrup. It's got dyes in there. Pick your neurotoxin dye in there. And so, yeah, so Michael Pollan says eat natural foods, but they've been altered, and unless you eat organic, you're going to eat the GM food and their pesticides. And what we don't know is perhaps there are some of us, Dr. Hoffman, who could tolerate it. And I think they're more commonly in adults. But children now are being born pre-polluted. Their bodies are so toxic, and I believe this to be true, that they cannot tolerate it. And these even small amounts in some kids, not all, in some kids cannot tolerate even these small amounts of GM food and pesticides. Mm-hmm. And they respond. I mean, they are symptomatic. They have chronic abdominal pain. They have bloating. They're gassy. They're having the reflux that we've discussed. And then they're having neurocognitive dysfunction because we know there's a link, and you've talked about this before, between leaky gut and leaky brain.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, as our good colleague, Dr. Vassano says, what happens in the gut doesn't stay in the gut. It may go systemic.
And we've researched Dr. Vassano's work. I think he's fabulous. You know, pediatric gastroenterologist from Harvard. We quoted him. We use his work. We reference his work. I've been, you know, he's spoken to intestinal permeability in his papers. And so I base a lot of what I've studied on Dr. Vassano's work, actually. Absolutely.
Indeed. So let's get to the crux of the matter, because you devote a considerable amount of time to a discussion of what's wrong with GMOs. The conventional scientific position, and, you know, so you see paper after paper, the proponents of GMOs say, hey, you know, we're going to save the world because the world needs more robust agricultural products. GMOs, in fact, can reduce our dependence on pesticides because they're resistant to bugs. You know, this is science. And basically what we're doing is we're taking it a step further. Humans have been breeding plants since time immemorial. And all we're doing is we're just improving on these natural species.
I would like to think that's true. And I can't, you know, and we have used some genetic modification techniques in making insulin, for example. And so they use a genetically modified E. coli to make some, you know, mm-hmm. insulin.
It's the basis of the pharmaceutical industry. They just crank out these products based on big vats of bacteria and yeast that synthesize these compounds.
And so, you know, there's, you know, I'm not throwing the baby out with the bathwater here. There's probably a lot of use in, you know, pharmacologically speaking, of genetic modification. But in terms of our food, you know, the first thing that is shocking, and again, I use that word again here, is that genetically modified has not been studied in humans. I base most of what I do in children based on rats, chicken, and pigs. And so how did we allow this to happen? How could we have allowed this food product that is, quote, generally recognized as safe, GRAS, which has not been studied? I find that pretty remarkable. So if we look back to the work that I mentioned earlier of Dr. Arpad Pusti, and this is where my first introduction was, and you look at his histopathology slides of the rats who were fed genetically modified potatoes. And what he found was, and I saw the slides, you can look at them on Google Images. One, you know, the rats fed the genetically modified potato had hyperplasia of the stomach lining. And you and I both know that hyperplasia is a precursor to dysplasia, which is a precursor to cancer. Additionally, he found that there was disruption of the villi of the intestine when the rats fed just genetic modified potatoes. And when I saw those disrupted microvilli, I thought, it looks like what leaky gut would look like, mm-hmm. intestinal permeability.
Or even celiac disease. You know, the damage to the villi is characteristic of celiac.
And this could definitely be a precursor to that. And I said, well, there's no wonder that, you know, the zonular molecules are not working well, the gates are dysfunctional, and that food is crossing prior to being, you know, properly digested by stomach acid, by enzymes, and not only food, but so you have gluten improperly digested, dairy. What about microbes, toxicants going cross, and your immune system activated, and you've created a state of chronic inflammation. So that is the first thing I noticed about Dr. Pusti's work. Fast forward to Dr. Seralini's work, which was vilified, and whoever speaks out tends to get vilified, mm-hmm. Out of France, and he also just looked at the genetic modification process, and he also found that they were tumorigenic, even though he was doing a toxicology study. And so, you know, that was about 4 or 5 years ago. So we fast forward now to this year, Dr. Michael Antonio, who is a genetic researcher out of King's College in London, and he did this beautiful study using metabolomics, cutting-edge research, looking at rats fed genetically modified, I believe he used maize, and he found high levels of oxidative stress and very high levels of polyamines. Now, we know that we have polyamines in high amounts in our bodies. They're very common. He found particularly, I think, putrescine and cadaverine. I don't have the study in front of me. But polyamines in very high amounts can also be tumorigenic. Mm-hmm. And so what did the IARC find, you know, the World Health Organization in, you know, March of 2015? That there was a link, you know, between their use of glyphosate and cancer. I suspect as well that also that the genetic modification process in itself has cancer potential. Mm-hmm. And so based on that research and based on this chronic inflammation that I see in children, I'm saying, why do I not practice the precautionary principle and just change their food? Why should kids eat food that's been adulterated, not studied, and filled with pesticides? Pesticides are known for children produce every health challenge you can imagine. I mean, that's been well documented in the literature. So why wouldn't I do that? That's the part I don't understand, why everyone's not embracing this.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is a good point at which to pause, because I want to delve further into potential problems with GMOs and what the benefits are of a GMO-free organic diet are for kids. Today's guest, Dr. Michelle Perro. She is co-author of What's Making Our Children Sick. It's a great new book. It lays out the case for diet and environmental related causes of many of our childhood epidemics that are affecting so many kids these days. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we'll be right back with part two of today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Stay with us.